Tonight's guest on Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show, July 11, 2008, is Stanton Friedman. I think everybody knows who Stanton is. He has a B.S. and M.S. degree in physics from the University of Chicago. He has lectured on flying saucers are real to more than 700 college and professional audiences in the United States and abroad. He has appeared on radio and TV, including CBS Sunday Morning, Larry King Live, Nightline, Unsolved Mysteries. Friedman authored Top Secret Majestic about Operation Majestic 12, co-authored Crash at Corona, the definitive study of the Roswell incident. He was the original civilian investigator of the very important event, and he also co-authored Captured, the Betty and Barney Bill UFO experience. And we had him on the show on that, and I'm holding this up for the audience so everybody can see it. There's his new book, Flying Saucers and Science. And by the way, Stanton just told me he's going to be on Larry King next week. Plug, plug. Here we go. But I love it. I hope that skeptic's on there. So anyhow, Stanton, calling you Larry now. Tell us all about Roswell. I know you just came back from Roswell last week, 4th of July, Big Bang weekend.
Well, yeah, I was there for 5 days, and I gave 4 lectures, and I was on a panel about Roswell. We had a new witness, which was kind of neat. It's a long haul. I signed an awful lot of books, and I hadn't realized it, but I was in some history show that I didn't know about. I mean, that it was done some time back, that was broadcast the day before, so everybody was coming up to the table. I just saw you on television. I didn't know anything about it.
Wow, you're getting really out there. You know, you've been doing this a long time.
Yes,
you deserve,
I have.
You're finally getting to be a household guy now, you know, around the world, practically, aren't you?
Well, I guess so. Everybody coming up to my table saying, oh, I see you all the time on television. And I have to say, well, I don't see you and I'm in your living room. But
yeah, there you go. So how's the new book doing anyway?
Well, you know, it's really amazing. The book came out the first week in June.
Right.
And on June 22nd, I was on Coast to Coast Radio with George Knapp for 4 hours. That's 2 to 4 in the morning, my time. 2 to 6 in the morning.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're 4 hours split behind Pacific time, aren't you?
Ahead.
Sorry, ahead, yeah. It's way through 11 o'clock back there now, then.
Yes, it is. It's 10 o'clock.
Yeah, 10 to 11 when you're done here, yeah.
Anyway, within 2 days, it was number one in 3 different categories on Amazon.com. And one of them, two of them dealt with science, space science, astrophysics, stuff like that. So I've been very pleased. It's dropped a little bit since then, but the publisher is very happy, and so am I. The response, I get a lot of email, as you can imagine, and response has been very, very good. Now, I'm waiting for the nasty, noisy negativist to give me a hard time, but you know, maybe that'll come after the King show, because the show will have some very good guests at the first part anyway. Robert Hastings, who lectures about flying saucers, and 3 Air Force retired people who have been involved in important UFO cases. Robert Salas with the Malmstrom Air Force Base, Bob Jacobs with the Vandenberg case with the rocket and the UFO, the nose cone on the UFO, and there's another one on there. And then, unfortunately, things will be downturned because Mr. Nye, the science guy, will show up again.
Like he was on last week.
Yes, he was. I didn't see it all because I was in a panel at the time in Roswell.
He couldn't even keep his propaganda straight.
Well, it's really amazing. There seem to be requirements for television skeptics. A, you don't know anything about the subject. B, you can shout loudly. See, you can claim all kinds of things without anybody challenging you. And, you know, they have to follow the 4 basic rules. Don't bother me with the facts. My mind's made up. What the public doesn't know, I'm not going to tell them. If you can't attack the data, attack the people and do your research by proclamation, because investigation is too much trouble and nobody will know the difference. So he's going to come on after that first segment, and then I come on with James Fox and Nye for the last 2 segments, and it should be interesting. As you know, I have a very low tolerance for nasty, noisy negativists who don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, are you going to rip him up a little?
I'm going to try.
Yeah.
And I've been looking to see if maybe somebody who's listening can help me, but I've been looking to see if he's ever written anything about UFOs. You know, I've written four books, published, I don't know, 100 papers now, do a monthly column. I think his qualifications are that he has done children's television science programs and knows that there's nothing to flying saucers. What else does he need to know? Let me just give one example. He tried to explain away Roswell as a skyhook balloon.
Right, I heard that.
Now, skyhook balloons are large polyethylene balloons, teardrop-shaped, and have nothing whatsoever of any sort to do with Roswell. I mean, people argue about mogul balloons. At least they were standard, you know, 3 or 4 foot, the kind you used to buy in surplus stores, weather balloons.
Right.
A whole chunk of them, 20, 24. Now, mogul balloons don't fit either. But at least nobody, except him, has been foolish enough to claim that it was a skyhook balloon. He's mixing that up with the Mantell case. All right, you know.
So I know he's mixing. He needs to read your book, Flying Saucers and Science. And by the way, I just want to tell everybody out there, Stanton covers a lot of things like escape velocities. A lot of science is submarine stuff, magnetic propulsion in submarines. You've got pictures, some great pictures of nuclear propulsion systems, which I've never seen before. You've done an outstanding job on this book. I can see why it's getting in the science category, because it's a great beginner book for young scientists. It really is. It's hard to put down once you start reading it.
Well, I thank you very much. It's one of those books that, yeah, I should have worked another 30 days on it, but I had a deadline, and so I filled it. And on my next trip, probably out to the Larry King show, I'm going to try to read it and catch any mistakes before the monsters jump on me for it, you know. But
yeah,
you know,
I do a volume too.
Well, yeah, there is a need for a book like that that covers the stuff that I cover, simply because nobody else has. I mean, where else do you see a discussion of science fiction writers and UFOs and science?
Yeah, great documents in here. All these emulated phony documents, courtesy of the U.S. government. I like that one.
Yeah, and also, and this will make everybody angry on the other side of the fence, it's a small group, but the cult of SETI, you know, SETI standing for Silly Effort to Investigate.
Right.
And I deliberately reveal the lack of basis for the whole SETI program. And, you know, just one simple example of that. They say there is no evidence for UFOs. Now, I talk about five large-scale scientific studies, a whole chapter on major studies, which they never talk about, you understand. Now, what evidence has been provided by any SETI believer, and that's what we ought to call them, believers, that there is anybody out there capable of sending signals or already sending signals that we might pick up here? They have provided no evidence whatsoever. It's all hypothetical, theoretical. This is what I'd like to believe is true. If you ignore the UFO evidence, which of course they do, they provide not a whit of evidence. You know, and it's quite remarkable. They demand, some of them demand that I provide them with a body. You're a saucer. What have they got? I got physical trace cases. I got multiple witness radar visual cases. Got a couple of thousand pilot sightings, blacked out documents, whited out documents.
I got a bunch of them right here in my hand.
And we've got the good abduction cases, such as reported and captured. And what do they have? Nothing. It's truly remarkable. And
yeah, that's a little bit the great expose Francis Drake project. You know, it's a joke.
Well,
I never always wondered. I thought back in '66 or so when they first started the program, they actually found something, and then it all got quiet real quick. You know?
Well, you know, they're dreaming. They want to find something. And what I find fascinating is, as the years have gone by and they haven't picked up any signals, not surprising at all, because we have no idea what kind of communication systems aliens are using, they keep moving the distance to the nearest one, farther and farther away. Jill Tarter is now talking about Within 1,000 light years, there's due to be somebody. And when we make contact, that will be a real breakthrough for everything. You know, you ask them a question. Hey, guys, how can we solve our problem? 2,000 years later, you're going to get an answer back?
Yeah, right. Hey, Stan, I got to tell you, so I've got a lot of people on video watching, you know.
Yeah.
And I just showed them a picture on page 123, the author and the command module of Apollo 12. And you look like you just got rid of your diapers and got into a three-piece suit. You look so cute here.
Well, you know,
I got to show this again. I get it. Everybody's seeing you now.
You've been doing this
a long time, for sure.
I have a warped sense of humor. That picture was an official picture taken by NASA.
Wow.
They had me speak crazily to the NASA people only, none of the North American Rockwell people.
Yeah, I was the one at Rockwell that put the damn thing together. I didn't get my picture taken.
Well, they gave me a tour. That picture is with the Apollo 12 command module.
Yeah.
And I look young, because I was.
Yeah, you are young. You look like you're 18 or so here.
Well, I wasn't 18. Come on now. This was I was at least 38 or something like that.
I bet you had to show your ID when you went into a bar and get a glass of wine.
Interesting thing to many people is my beard and my hair are black as can be, and they ain't no more.
Yeah, I guess the steel wore down on you a little bit.
Well, I'm a little older than that, and there's another funny picture there. Toward the back, I think, there's a picture of me and a bust of an alien.
Oh, I got to find that. Show it on
tours. I get kind of a kick out of it. You're right about, I do have pictures of nuclear rockets.
Yeah, I've been showing them.
That nobody else covers in books. And one of the other things that there's a whole chapter in there, and you can get here from there. And that's
I was reading that. It's brilliant. Yeah.
Well, it's one of the big arguments with the SETI people is they talk as if chemical rocket propulsion was the ultimate in propulsion. And what's funny, most of these guys are astronomers.
Yeah.
And they certainly know that most of the energy in the universe is produced by nuclear fusion reactions in stars, like our star and all the other stars in the
neighborhood.
Now, you'd think that they would recognize that a nuclear fusion propulsion system might be an interesting advance, since you can use it to kick particles out the back end that have 10 million times as much energy per particle as you can get in a dumb old chemical rocket. But no, they don't talk about fusion. They can't be bothered. You know, they're so academically oriented. Most people have no idea how big the programs are in industry as opposed to how small they are in universities.
Right.
You know, 6 professors and 12 grad students is a big project. Nuclear airplanes, we had 3,500 people working on them, you know. And so I try to rub it in a little bit, but what I really want to do is give the people who are already convinced that some UFOs are really in spacecraft ammunition in order to deal with the nasty, noisy negativists.
Yeah.
The people who make pronouncements, do their research by proclamation. I'm sick of them.
I've been through a lot of them, too.
Well, yeah, and I'm sure Bill Nye, the science guy, science in quotes, will be of interest to me. As you know, I've taken on Michael Shermer and Seth Shostak and others in formal debates on radio and television and whatever. And, you know, I should add, incidentally, many people don't realize it, when you're on Larry King, this will be my third time on the past
year. Do you have to fly back there or what?
Oh, I got to fly back there, all right. I'm getting picked up at 5 in the morning on Friday, and then I'll come back 9 o'clock on Saturday.
Well, you don't want to stay overnight down there, huh?
They will put me up overnight, one night.
Where's he going to be, down here in L.A. or over in New York?
L.A., Sunset.
Why don't you come and see me?
What?
Huh?
I'm hoping to see my daughter who lives out that way.
Yeah, bring her over to Laguna Beach. I got a beautiful place here.
Where?
I love it here. Yeah, come on over and visit. We'll go to dinner or something.
Won't have time. By the time I get, you know, with the big time changes, I'm 4 hours ahead of L.A.
Yeah.
So coming back the other way, it's a long day. And going out, it's a long day. But Maybe old and gray, but I'm still strong, Fred.
Oh, I know. Once upon a time you were a physicist. That's really great because it gives you the background. I think, you know, physics is one of the most important backgrounds we can have in these fields because it's hard to give us a snow job, especially you.
Well, you know, what's amazing to me is how people look toward astronomers. Somebody I've known for 40 years, a radio guy, interviewed me the other day, and he said, "Stan, you really come down hard on these guys, these astronomers and so forth." I said, "They deserve every bit of it."
Yeah, a lot of them are being stupid on taxpayers' money.
Well, that's right.
And bad, arrogant
on top of it,
makes
it even worse, you know.
Because I work in the cosmology field a little bit. I have a lot of guests from there and physicists. And luckily, I've been getting some pretty mellow ones. But man, oh man, their arrogance is just like, hello, incredibly arrogant.
Well, why should they do any homework? They're so smart already. There's surely nothing more to learn.
Yeah. Well, I find that the ones that are really smart are pretty humble, but they're few and far between, you know.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It will be interesting to see how the cult of SETI, and you notice I use that term in the book, turns out. And I should make everybody aware, I'm not saying radio telescopes don't give us any information about the universe. They do. But the notion that they will pick up signals sent by an unknown civilization from an unknown location, and most importantly, using a technique about which we know nothing, unless you assume that everybody throughout the universe uses our techniques for communication over long distances. And, you know, as I point out to people, I don't use the slide rule anymore. Why would you expect aliens to use... In the first place, you have to ask, why would they send us a message?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, what for? What's the point? They have no way of knowing whether we can receive it, whether we can translate it. And we're obviously, if we're not wandering around the local neighborhood, which they are, we're obviously not as advanced as they are. And these guys act as if aliens would want to talk to them. If they were coming here, they would certainly talk to the SETI people. And also, what I find really ludicrous, is these guys think they know how aliens would behave.
Yeah.
Now, where in the curriculum of an astronomer is there any insight given about the behavior of Earthlings, no less aliens?
Right.
Astronomy is about the universe out there, not about people, not about thinking beings. So it's truly a strange situation of how they have captured the high ground. They're the guys participating in the greatest search in man's history for other life out there. The fact that the other life may be coming here, we can't allow that now, of course. Because that would mean we're not as advanced as they are.
Yeah.
We're not worth talking to.
Yeah. Hey, so what happened over in Roswell? Can you tell the audience, my group out here, what you guys were doing and what was the excitement and anything different?
Well, it was hot.
Yeah.
There were crowds at both the International UFO Museum and Research Center, and the Civic Center had another gala going, if you will. The museum was better organized, and I did four lectures, believe it or not, spread out over, you know, two one morning, one the next day after that, and then a panel the next day after that. One lecture was about the UFO why questions, WHY. One was about the cult of SETI. One was you can get here from there. And the other one was entitled, amazingly enough, Flying Saucers and Science, the title of my book, readily available from my website at www.stantonfriedman.com. And Friedman is Friedman. If you don't spell it that way, you won't get me. And you can get all my books there and with autographs. You can buy them in Barnes & Noble, too, but they won't give you autographs.
No,
my autographs,
okay.
Anyway. So, good responses to all of these things. The panel was about the Roswell incident, and there was myself and Tom Carey and Don Schmidt And a new witness, an old man, 82, Earl Fulford, who finally decided, after many years of keeping quiet, that, heck, what can they do to me now? And see, he told this story well. He was briefly on that Larry King show, which didn't really give him a chance to say much.
Right.
His story was very simple. The boss says, I need five volunteers, you, you know, the usual military way. And they went out to the crash site. This was not the first day. And their job was to pick up wreckage in gunny sacks, you know, burlap bags, I guess is the title some people would use. And he told, at his amazement, when it was foil-like material, and people were familiar with foil, you know, cigarettes have foil around them and packages and so forth. And he said, you pick up the piece of foil, it's very lightweight, the size of your hand maybe, you'd crumble it up to throw it in the gunny sack, and by the time it got down in the gunny sack, it already had opened.
Like just retained its original shape.
Yeah.
But it had a memory.
Yeah, indeed. And that was very peculiar to him. And when they got back, a bunch of guys and a whole truck full of these gunny sacks, they were told to forever shut up, basically. And so he came across very well. And I'm sure there are other guys out there. And if they go to my website at www.stantonfriedman.com, they can find out how to contact me. My email address is on there. And my post office box in Maine, not only for buying stuff, but to let me know if they know of somebody who's got some information. I had an email today from somebody who says he knows somebody who wants to talk to me about Roswell who has some information. So I'm sure there's still some out there. And if it wasn't for the
some of these old-timers are finally coming out. They're not so scared. I think just the military must have gone around and scared a lot of people in those days, huh?
Well, they certainly did, and, it was the same with then-Colonel, when I talked to him, he was a retired General Thomas Jefferson Dubose. He's in some of the pictures taken in General Ramey's office in Fort Worth.
Right.
With the phony balloon wreckage, and Tommy told me, he was 86, I guess, that he likes what I'm doing. If he remembers anything more, he'll tell me, what can they do to me now, he said. And at 86, I suppose that's a legitimate question, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And I've talked to his family members. We had dinner together. This isn't just a little email note. I met with him in person. And that's one of the things, when you look at these noisy negativists, they don't do any investigation, far be it from them, to find anybody, you know, somebody new, or to talk to anybody old. They just do their pronouncements. There is no evidence. Repeat after me. There is no evidence.
Yeah.
It's a litany. It's almost a song. So,
yeah, by the way, that picture you're talking about is on page 224 of your book with you and Colonel T.J. Dubose.
Yes, that's right.
I'll hold it up for everybody to see it here.
Oh, good. Yeah, this is an interesting...
This is the way the show goes now. People get to see this stuff.
That's
and it goes
great.
In the archives, so people will be looking at it. I get about 40,000 hits on my archives a month. So we even archive the videos at BBS Radio now. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
So people will be looking at your book long after this show's over.
Well, good. Let them buy it and read it and share it with friends.
Yeah, they
That's
need to. This
want.
Is a really good... I think this is the best book you've ever written, to be honest with you. I mean, it's really factual, and it's straight to the point, and it's one of those kind of books you just don't put down. It doesn't get boring, you know what I mean?
Well, people have commented about how straightforward I am in the book.
Yeah, you are. This thing is totally clear.
In other words, you don't need to be a PhD in physics, which I am not, of course, to understand the book. Every Joe Blow can understand the book. So I'm pleased with the book and the response to it, not just because of sales, but the emails I get. You know, from people who have read it and who have been waiting for a book like this. And you see, what I find is, I don't know, there's something about my makeup that makes me a shepherd, not a sheep.
Yeah,
I'm willing
exactly.
to speak out. You know, I do my homework first, of course.
You've always been very due diligent. I know that for a fact.
And,
I've known you for 20 years.
Yeah, and so people like that because it saves them from doing the work. And Everybody is still fearful. They think most people don't believe in UFOs. Well, you know, I have a whole chapter in there about public opinion polls.
Yeah.
And most people do believe in UFOs. It's just that they believe most other people don't, so they won't speak out.
Yeah.
Lifting the laughter curtain is one of my goals. And so I've been pleased at the response because it's in that direction. You know, I'm less afraid to speak out now, people say. And that's good. We need somebody. I mean, Dr. Hynek is gone. James McDonald is long gone. If they want to follow in the footsteps of Stan Friedman, let them. I'm an old man, but I have a great-grandson, less than a year old, but I'm out there.
Well, hopefully people really start to get it now. I mean, I think they really are. And,
well, I think so. You know, there's
I've
been
never,
a heck of...
You know, the government is... I think everybody realizes now, whatever the government says, don't believe any of it. Go somewhere else.
You mean people think that the government isn't always telling the truth?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, you're right. You're right for sure. And it's good, because it wasn't too many years ago that people would raise an eyebrow if you suggested that the government might lie.
Oh, I know.
But
I know.
Now they're more likely. What's the president's believability rating or something? 28%?
I don't think it's even that much now.
So we can take advantage of that, and there are the news people are carrying more stories and less jaundiced than they used to be in most cases. I mean, we still, you know, in my section on press coverage, I still condemn the New York Times and Washington Post for not doing their job, for suffering from the, if there was anything to this, I would know about it, and I don't, so there must not be syndrome.
Yeah, I have a question for you. Is there some kind of... limitation or law that doesn't allow them to use the press lines from one state to another around the country, the wire services? Is there a limitation on UFO stories or not?
Well, I don't think so, but I'll tell you, I'm sure that there are guys who are paid to spend full time watching the internet,
yeah,
watching the news media, and, you know, stopping what they don't want to see go ahead. You know, people think, oh, that's silly, but during World War II,
yeah,
there was a story about uranium early in the war. General Leslie Groves talked to the press people and said, there will be no more stories about uranium that's needed for weapons, you know, and stuff, nuclear weapons.
Right.
We ain't going to talk about nuclear weapons. Also, there was an edict put out that the Japanese Fugo balloons would not be discussed, so the Japanese would have no idea whether their balloons, which were made out of rice paper silk, I guess, and carried bombs, and would float over the United States, and a couple people were killed by them. But at one point in the war, the word was, thou shalt not discuss Fugo balloons. So the Japanese wouldn't have any information about what was going on. So your suggestion that somebody might interfere is a good one, because, you know, it's always been that way. That is, things that clearly involve the national defense are things that the government has a right to say shouldn't be talked about, shouldn't be revealed, all that sort of thing. But the crazy thing here is that, of course, the government has officially stated that there is no threat to the security of the United States from UFOs. So how can you justify holding back the information? Well, I describe that in my UFO why questions. One of the key questions, of course, is why aren't they telling us what's going on? Besides, why would aliens come here? And why don't they land on a White House lawn? I get into all of these. And I have to add something that isn't in the book because I just found it out last week. It may surprise some people that I point out in the book that the Earth is the densest planet in the solar system. A cubic foot of Earth weighs more than a cubic foot of any other planet in the solar system, which means that there are more heavy metals here.
Exactly.
And I have a table in which I list the metals, and one of them is rhenium, R-H-E-N-I-U-M. It's twice the density of lead, approximately. That's a really
heavy
metal. Yeah. And it's rare. And it's used to alloy certain steels to make them more oxidation resistant and stronger at higher temperatures, got a very high melting point. Well, the point is, people say, what would you go over there for? To find stuff that you can't find at home. Why did guys go for gold to California or Alaska? You know, because there was good stuff there that they couldn't find back where they were. Anyway, the price of rhenium, I recently read an article last week, it had been running about $1,000 a kilogram as recently as 2006.
Right.
Now it's running $11,000 a kilogram.
Yeah, it's just like rhodium. Rhodium's done the same thing, gone from $300 to $10,000.
Yeah, well, we have some far-out stuff, and I should add, many people may not know this, but older stars have less of these heavy metals because they're created basically through supernova explosions and, you know, all this kind of stuff, like sort of far-out chemistry. We're all star stuff, as Carl Sagan used to say, which is true. Now, that means that my favorite target in the chapter on where are they from, Zeta 1 and Zeta 2 Reticuli, the two stars that turn up in the Betty and Barney Hill case, as
right.
described in the book Captured.
A great picture of you with Betty Hill also in your book, I might add.
Yeah, that was taken a long time ago, too.
you look like a little punk rocker, just like that other picture.
Well,
like you actually look like one of those jazz musicians of the time.
Oh, that sounds neat. I'm good at playing the radio. That's my musician
capability.
That's good,
capability. Yeah. Well, I want to ask you something. Now, we had a little incident here. It was reported in the Independent, Laguna Beach Independent paper here 2 weeks ago. And I haven't had a chance to call Stu up, the guy that wrote it, but here's what the article said. It said down at the hotel down there, the Montage Hotel, in that beach down there, a jet plane, you know, because Orange County Airport's a major airport, it's only about 10 miles away as a crow flies. They come in for approach over the ocean sometimes during the Santa Ana winds, which was happening that night. It said a guy shined a laser into the cabin and it upset the pilot. Now, the plane would be very high, and the standing on the ground flying over the laser, somebody pointing a small, let's say, handheld green laser, it would hit the bottom of the plane. There's no way I would think it would get up into the windows. Then the paper furthermore said that this was reported, and the pilot reported it to the FAA with a GPS reading, and then Highway Patrol helicopter came in with no sound, one of those no sound, and then it said some black helicopters also came in exactly to where this incident was reported, and the Laguna Beach Police Department were completely excluded from the from this whole scenario that went on. Now that
I'll
I don't
darned.
Think was a green laser pointing in somebody's face. I think that was some kind of an incident. What do you think?
Well, it sounds like it. They are worried about that. I use a green laser. They're effective on screens and stuff.
Yeah.
You know? And you, from underneath, you certainly couldn't do it. But if it's off to the side a little bit, you might get into a window. I don't see how you could get into the eyes of the pilot. But
But why would black helicopters, and this is in the paper, and I can send you a copy of the article. Why would all these helicopters and all this come out here, and these black ones with no lights on them, if it's just a little old laser in a pilot's face? I mean,
it's a little hard to imagine, and you wonder if they haven't left out some parts of the story, although the TSA, the security people, are awful sensitive about some things. Right? I understand they take things away from people sometimes without any reason at all.
Yeah, and they raid your suitcase for no reason.
Oh, they do raid your suitcase. When you get home, you'll find a little piece of paper inside that it says inspected.
Sometimes you'll find things missing, too. Like the last time I was missing an electric razor. I don't know where that went, but it was
a very nice
Panasonic brand-new portable razor that I use on the road, and I don't have it anymore. I had it when I left San Francisco. When I got here, I had a piece of paper.
Son of a gun.
Yeah. Small razor.
Hey, you know you can cut people up with an electric razor.
Oh, yeah. But it was in my regular luggage. Yeah, I guess you could shred somebody.
You could. With the portable power supply, too, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm not kidding. And I've had people lose their cameras a lot. So I always carry a little bag, you know, around my shoulder, a little walk-on bag, and I put my camera and my expensive stuff in there now, my Walkman and all that. Well, it's actually an MP3 thing now, but I put everything in there because of what I've heard, these horror stories. But I didn't think you had to put a razor in there, but from now on, the razor's going to be in there too, you know?
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. I travel enough. I'm a
How
million...
have you done with that? Have you lost anything?
Or what?
You just have a good paper collection?
I don't pay much attention to
them.
Yeah, you know, what are you going to do? And I understand now most airlines are charging for your baggage. And,
yeah, that's brand new, yeah.
I'm a million miler with Delta, so I don't pay for that. But,
no, that's good.
I guess you pay for the second bag.
Yeah, but you're like me, you don't have a second bag.
Well, when I travel, you see, sometimes I'm loaded down with books and my DVDs, Flying Saucers Are Real, and my... old the DVD, Recollections of Roswell, Testimony from 26 Witnesses. So we're going modern here because VHS tapes are sort of passe, you know, and I've been using slides.
Yeah, I did for years.
Yeah, and the Kodak Carousel Projector is a very reliable unit, and the slides have much higher resolution than the digital stuff, but... they stopped making the projectors, and some people are insisting, oh, you got to use PowerPoint, Stan, or whatever the next thing is.
Yeah, PowerPoint's what I'm using now. It took me forever to learn how to use it, though.
Well, you know, I like looking at an audience. I don't want to look at the screen of a laptop computer.
Oh, exactly. Tell me about it. Yeah.
You know, I look at the audience, and I want to look at the screen and point out things to them. Who are you talking to? I don't want to talk to a computer, you know, but
oh, yeah.
I'm an old fogey, and, you know, that's what we do, but complain about the new guys. But it is funny, incidentally, that some people have assumed that PowerPoint digital camera pictures or stuff, oh, they must be higher resolution than slides. Well, they're nowhere near the resolution.
I agree with you 100%. I converted my slides. I bought a machine to convert the slides into the PowerPoint. And the slides were better, believe me.
Yeah, no question about it. I wonder if any of the people listening know anything that might be interesting, not only about Roswell, of course, but about more recent stuff with, like, Stephenville, you know.
Yeah, what about that Texas incident? What's going on down there? Have you been down there or investigated that yet?
Well, I haven't been down there, but I'm a member of MUFON, and I just today downloaded a long article on the FAA radar information, which they used Freedom Information to get, and it's going to be presented. There is a MUFON annual conference in San Jose, next week, I guess it is, or the week after. Look at www.mufon.com. And they're having some outstanding speakers from overseas, military people and political people. But they will be presenting the radar data, and it is kind of shocking that there were indeed, what's the term, uncorrelated targets. That is, without transponders on them, which is a no-no for any commercial or military plane, that were picked up on radar, heading in the general direction of Crawfordsville, which is the president's hometown.
Yeah, that's real interesting, yeah.
Yeah, and originally, apparently, they had denied that, but they used FOIA requests to get the information. So I haven't read the whole article yet. It's a long piece. But that ought to shake some people up. You remember how foolish the government looked when they said, oh, there were no F-16s. One of the witnesses had said that there were F-16s chasing a UFO. No, we didn't have any out that night, sorry. And then 10 days later, oh, you know, we forgot. We had 10 of them out that night.
Yeah, just, yeah.
And I think that went over like a rhenium balloon, you know. It didn't float very high in lending credibility to the government proclamation. So it's going to be an interesting time. Incidentally, there are other crashes besides Roswell. Aztec, New Mexico. There's going to be a conference in March. There was one this past year. That's up in the Four Corners area there.
Yeah, how, on the Aztec crash, was that a similar disc? What did you think?
It was bigger. I'm waiting for the book by Scott Ramsey. He and his wife, Suzanne, who lives in that general area, they now live in North Carolina, but they have talked to more darn witnesses and spent more money and time chasing down witnesses to Aztec. That was March 1948, you understand.
Yeah, it's been a little while.
Yeah, and again, we have the cover-up and the government lies and all that sort of stuff.
Did they try to say that was a balloon, too?
No, they're saying it's a hoax, nothing happened, just made up, blah, blah, blah. And there's another crash, Shag Harbor, Nova Scotia.
I've heard of that one, but I didn't know much about it.
Well, there's a book, now I have to think of the name of the book. It's by Don Ledger, who's a pilot, and Chris Stiles, who was an investigator, and they've done a splendid Dark Object, that's the name of the book. And there's going to be a conference in Shag Harbor, which is at the southwestern tip of Nova Scotia. It's a long ride around from me unless I take the ferry across the Bay of Fundy, which is between New Brunswick and Nova Scotia anyway. There were witnesses to that one going down, and the RCMP was involved right away. And so they're having a conference on August 8th and 9th. I'm speaking there.
Oh, good.
And there's another conference, MUFON, Illinois, is having a conference in Tinley Park, Illinois, on Sunday, August the, that should attract a lot of people. I'm speaking, there's several other people speaking.
How many people came to Roswell, by the way, this year?
Oh, geez, thousands.
Really?
Thousands, of course.
Same as last year, or bigger or smaller or what?
I think last year there might have been a few more because it was the 60th anniversary and because the price of gas was a heck of a lot less. You know, it's a 200-mile drive from Albuquerque or Amarillo or El Paso. You know, it's a fast drive.
There
ain't nothing
there. Out of nowhere.
But the crowds were good at both places, and there was a parade and, you know, kid stuff, some concerts. They go big for fireworks down there, and for three nights there were fireworks. Every direction you look, you could see fireworks. Roswell, you know, the base there was the home of thousands of troops. They've got a 13,000-foot runway.
Wow.
Which is, it is exceeded by those out at Area 51, of course. But when you look at commercial airports, that's big.
Well, that's almost 3 miles long.
That's right. And it was built, in case people are wondering, what the heck are they doing with a 13,000-foot runway? The B-36s were enormous airplanes, bigger than a 747. And they were based there to carry nuclear weapons. They had a range of about 10,000 miles.
Yeah, they were huge.
Yeah, and they had six engines.
B-47 Stratofortis, only bigger, and they had turbines and jets on them, right?
Yeah, they weren't as fast as the B-47 or the B-52. And
yeah, that was the last thing before the full jet deal came out. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and I've been on one. They had one down at Fort Worth, Texas, when I was doing some nuclear airplane radiation shielding experiments. And they had an open house day and one parked out there, and they used one to carry a small nuclear reactor in the air to do radiation shielding experiments. But they had one there, and they are so huge. I mean, it's just incredible. And it reminded me of the Spruce Goose, you know, over at Long Beach.
Yeah, I went on board that one. That was huge, all wood.
Yeah, monstrous. I guess it's up in Tacoma now or someplace like that. But so there have been, at Roswell, the runway was 6 foot thick concrete.
Wow.
Well, they were loaded airplanes, and there's a unique industry down there, one that you can't do many places. Somebody paints and fixes 747s. It means you have to have a long enough runway, and you have to have space to store them, and the weather is great in Roswell. So it was yet another successful conference, and There were, I don't know how many newsmen were there. I did a number of interviews when I was there, so, you know.
We'll be seeing you on TV and stuff all over the place for a while.
Well, that's what they tell me, and, you know, you never know. And big coincidence that I was in a couple of shows that were on the day before and 2 days before, and I didn't know anything about them. People say, I saw you on the tube yesterday. I said, what show was that? Well, don't you know? They don't tell you when the show is going to be rerun.
No, they don't.
It's a strange world. But there's another conference coming up. People want to go to West Virginia, just St. Albans, just outside Charleston, September 12th and 13th, the Flatwoods Monster Festival, if you will.
What's the Flatwood Monster? What's that?
It was a big case in 1952, September 12th. Flatwoods is, halfway, it's the center of the state of West Virginia. It's north of Charleston, small town. That, remember, 52 was the big year for UFO sightings.
Yeah.
More for Blue Book.
That's the year they were over the White House?
Yeah. That was in July.
Okay.
And they kept up after that. Well, on the 22nd, on the 12th, Frank Fascino Jr. spent like 15 years on this case.
Wow.
And he got the Blue Book files. On that one day, there were 120 cases listed in Project Blue Book, which you believe, most in any one day. And what happened, one of them crash-landed, I'll say, came down at a field on a hill surrounded by trees, but the field was clear. And kids saw this, and they ran over to the hill. They started up the hill, and from behind a tree came this probably mechanical device about 10 feet, 12 foot tall. Probably was a being inside of it. Anyway, it was emitting a gas, scared the heck out of the kids. They got sick, too. They and the dogs that they brought with them turned around and went back home. Well, the case got a lot of attention right then. And they were on a program called We the People a couple of weeks or so later. And the press kind of ridiculed things. The drawings of the monster weren't very good. Well, Frank has talked to the original witnesses, as have I. I was there for the 50th anniversary of that, which was 2002, of course. And they are putting on this, I'll call it a festival. And Frank talked to a colonel with the reserve who was secretly told to go check it out by people from Washington. Frank's the only one he ever talked to, on camera, mind you, so we have a permanent record of it. And he also talked to the reporter. The colonel's dead, and so's the reporter now, a guy named Stewart, who saw the kids that very night and talked to the police and saw the kids the next day. And he went with them to We the People. Nobody else has talked to these guys. So that festival, I'll be speaking there. I spoke 5 years ago, 6 years ago now.
What happened to the UFO that crashed? Did it take off again or what?
Yes, it did. There were apparently, something was going on. There were so many sightings and several instances of where they came down, touched down briefly, and took off again. And, you know, maybe because one of the things Frank makes in his book, it's called Shoot Them Down. We found out that there were orders given to military pilots to shoot down UFOs if they don't land when instructed to do so. And the head of the American Rocket Society, a guy named Farnsworth, actually wrote President Truman saying he thought that was a terrible idea. We should make visitors welcome, not shoot at them. And Frank in the book takes note of the fact that there were over 200 fatal military jet crashes between 1951 and 56, including three crashes in which the pilot had done over 100 missions in Korea.
Wow.
That's a lot of experience. MiGs were chasing them, you know. They come back to the United States and they crash. No MiGs around here.
No.
So, very strange. And incidentally, I have heard seven instances of more planes going up than came back after chasing those UFOs. So it sounds like they responded in kind. You know, you're going to attack me, I'll zap you kind of thing. And that's one of the things, if anybody listening Obviously, they were not a pilot who was shot down by a UFO fatally, but if they were a ground crew member, for example.
Right.
Or the wingman to the guy who was shot down, I'd sure like to hear from them. Because I think that's one of the reasons the government isn't telling us much, because you'd hate to admit that these non-existent saucers destroyed some of your fanciest aircraft, wouldn't
you? Yeah, exactly. Why don't you put your... we've got a little bit of time left. Give us your email address. Can you do that?
Yeah, my email address, and it's a cutesy. I tried five or six different ones, and they were all taken, so I wound up with FS for Flying Saucer. Not
that.
Frank Sinatra, same difference. PHYS for Physicist or Physician or whatever you want. At Rogers, Rogers. .com, FSPHYS at Rogers.com, and the website where you can order all my goodies, read a whole bunch of different articles, have fun, is www.stanton, S-T-A-N-T-O-N, Friedman, F-R-I-E-D-M-A-N, .com. And I have PayPal on there to make it easy. Somebody thanked me today. I don't know whether they... didn't think I would deal with checks. Of course I take checks. It's, you know, I'm sure it's on the credit check. And anybody who's interested in UFOs, they must be honest, right?
Yeah.
Now, but,
that's F-S-P-H-Y-S, right? At Rogers.com?
Yeah. Flying Saucer Physicist.
Rogers.com. Roger
R-O-G-E-R.
Rogers.
Rogers. It's one of the big companies in Canada. I live in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada.
Okay.
73 miles east of beautiful downtown Holton, Maine. My post office address, if you want to write me, post office box address is P.O. Box 958, Holton, H-O-U-L-T-O-N, Maine, which is M-E, folks, not M-A, 0470-0958. The book with an autograph and sent out by priority mail is $19.
It's well worth it. I tell you, this is one of the best books that Professor Friedman has ever written. I love it. And what I'm going to do is, the reason I asked you the second time for the email address, tomorrow when I write up the archive for this show, because there'll be so many people looking at it that didn't catch the show tonight because they'll listen to it tomorrow, you know, post-recorded. I'll have your email address in there, and I'm going to say that you want information from these different areas, especially the pilots, and blah, 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 because I have a heck of a lot of pilots that are probably flying right now that can't hear the show that will. So that's why I asked you all that, and that's why I went over that again.
Good. One of the problems people have on this subject, they want to tell somebody, but they don't know how to reach somebody they can trust, not to give them a hard time.
Yeah.
I'm that person, and I don't use names without witness permission, but we hate to not get the data for it to go to the grave with the people who have it. And so, you know, we don't need to disclose their names, but we want to check on their stories.
Exactly. Yeah,
and don't forget, I'll be on Larry King next Friday night, and in the second half of the program, and hopefully dealing with... Bill Nye, the science guy.
Hopefully you get to shred him.
I'm going to try, because I have very little tolerance. You know, I've been around a long time. I'm so fed up with debunkers being given a public platform and yet not knowing anything. You wouldn't do that in anything else. I mean,
I don't know why Larry King and some of these shows do that. I don't know why they do that. I mean, it just takes away from the beauty of the spirituality of the event to me. It's like throwing a bunch of marbles into a delicate clock gear system or something. I don't know why they do that.
You
have to have a skeptic.
Yeah, there seems to be a rule. You've got believers over here and skeptics over there, and the two sides are of equal value, and now have at it, guys,
it's not really fair.
Well, since the believers are usually investigators who spend an enormous amount of time, money, and effort, and the debunkers, the so-called skeptics, are people who know nothing about the subject. They're armchair theorists who would be hard-pressed to, you know, say they've read any of the serious books. Why should they be given equal value? I don't see it.
Amen. I mean, even some of the events that you and I used to do before. In the old days, we had to deal with that and some of these panels and stuff. I mean, it's amazing. And it seems to be, they think it's fair and balanced somehow. I think it's, you know, I don't believe that anymore.
Hey, if you were doing a show on brain surgery, would you give equal time to the guy who mops the floor and to the surgeon?
Have a janitor in there to make sure the procedure is correct.
Yeah, I mean, you'd ask him his opinion about the right way to do brain surgery, wouldn't you?
Of course you would.
That's the kind of thing that one runs into, and it's aggravating. And
it should be called fair and idiot's point of view.
Well, you know, I may sound angry at these guys, and I am. Why should, you know, you've got your Michael Shermers and your Seth Shostaks and your Bill Nyes.
Yeah.
And they're the astrobiology people. And they make all these claims having no basis in fact.
Yeah.
One of them in an astrobiology blog that Shermer published said that there's never been any sightings on all these surveillance cameras. Well, if you look it up on the internet, first page, you got 10 cases of UFO observations by surveillance camera. Research by proclamation.
Yeah.
That's not scientific. It's nonsense.
It's true. Well, we're running out of time, Stan. I want to get you come back on the show again sometime.
Okay. I won't have another book for many months.
Yeah, this will keep you busy, and I think a few other hosts on our network will probably have you on, too. I
know okay.
We've got a very wide variety of hosts on BBS and a very wide audience now. So
good. More power to them.
Yeah, you know what? We're getting to be one of the largest Internet shows in the world, and we got a lot of above-the-ground stations picking us up all the time, too.
Good, good. The more the merrier.
www.stanfriedman.com. I'll have all this up. So all this archive will be posted. Tonight we've had a special guest, Stanton T. Friedman, with his new book, Flying Saucers and Science. He'll be on Larry King next week, trying to get him
Friday.
Down and see me. All right, Stanton, thanks a lot, man.
My pleasure.
All right, my pleasure, and it's always wonderful to have you on our show.
Thanks much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, and we'll see you next week.